Thank you for tuning in to RGCWV, Random Geek Culture in West Virginia. And tonight I am here with Dan Desmond.
Hey.
And he has started, actually, you've been doing this for a little while now.
Yeah, about 2 years, a little over 2 years.
Yeah, a little over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And he's doing stand-up comedy. And I actually wanted to sit down and talk with him because one of the things that we do with this podcast is, you know, take something that's normal and see how it's a little different in West Virginia. So that's kind of what I wanted to do tonight.
That's awesome.
So I'll just start out, Dan. So you said you've been doing it for 2 years.
Yeah.
So I got to ask.
Yeah.
How has it evolved over time? I mean, how comfortable have you gotten?
I'm never comfortable. I generally am always nervous. It's kind of like probably performing, going on any type of karaoke. If you've ever done karaoke,
yeah,
or if you've been a band going on stage, you get a little nervous beforehand. But
right,
as soon as you go on, you kind of autopilot and just work through it. 2 years may sound like a lot of time, but it's not. I mean, I've known people that are 7, 10 plus years.
Yeah,
you get more
right
and more comfortable with working with people. Like, I can't do crowd work nearly as well as a lot of other people because they got to think on their toes.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of prepare a lot more of my material, but I'm trying to get out there and get more comfortable with interacting with somebody out in the crowd. But it's fun, but it takes a lot of practice the more and more you do it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, how much is prepared work and how much is crowd work and everything. So I got to ask, do you get hecklers?
Generally, I mean, West Virginia is not too bad. I mean, a couple times when I've hosted open mics, there might be a couple drunk people in a crowd, and usually
right,
they holler back. But it's not in a bad way around here as much as I like the interaction where I am working on some material where I say that I'm in love with dogs' butts, and usually people are, like, taken back by the idea of dog butts,
yeah,
like me loving dog butts. But then whenever I tell people... Yeah, I mentioned a corgi. I said, well, look up corgi videos on Facebook, and then there's always one or two people that are, like, pointing at me, so I can kind of work with them a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to get a couple people that I'm like, I understand that they're getting where I'm coming from.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Then people usually interact a lot better with me after they realize that I'm not just some sort of maniac.
Yeah, that's not your only obsession.
No. But corgi butts are fantastic.
Yeah. So, I got to ask, you know, in West Virginia, how do you think it's molded and shaped your material? Like, not only day to day, but also your audience, you know, the people that you talk to, you know, after a while you get used to, you know, what kind of jokes stick and what don't. How do you think West Virginia has molded that?
Well, it's interesting, and I'm learning that every crowd is kind of different, where at first, certain crowds like quick one-liners and then other ones are more of stories. You kind of just, you have to figure out how the crowd is picking everything up. I'm more of a storyteller, but I'm trying to learn to interject a little more of the one-line type of items in my stories to kind of gather more of an audience. But it's also, normally a lot of open mics are in Morgantown, and the open mics are a younger crowd. So I've made Forrest Gump references before. I'm working on a joke a little bit about my stepdaughter not knowing what the mall was in D.C. So she wanted to go to the mall in D.C. So when I showed her the mall in D.C., I explained, well, don't you remember Forrest Gump when Jenny was running through the mall? And she's like, I never saw this. And I realized that a lot of people that are in their 20s, because I'm 42, I've never seen Forrest Gump.
41.
Yeah.
42.
So I got to learn that what I assume is the standard reference, like Back to the Future or Jurassic Park or Forrest Gump, these audiences that are in their 20s may have never seen them. So you got to kind of learn to be a little more general on my topics. And it's kind of like whenever you see adults, what I assume is adults in their 60s and 70s, and they talk about, yeah, there's the 70-year-old adults, and they talk about some Lenny Bruce and stuff like that.
Oh,
no
yeah,
one's going to know Lenny Bruce nowadays. And even when I was younger, I was like, I don't know who Lenny Bruce is.
I didn't know who Lenny Bruce was. And then I started watching that show. I don't know if you've seen it. Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Yes.
Oh, man. That yeah. show was so good.
But you don't, like, people don't know. Whenever we were younger, if my mom made a Lenny Bruce reference, I would have no clue what she's talking about.
He was so edgy of the time. I didn't learn about him until after. And I was like, was this a real guy? And then I go, and it's like this huge rabbit hole. You know,
And he got arrested. There's cops waiting for him.
Yeah.
To say something wrong.
And he knew that this was going to happen.
He knew he was going to get arrested. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you ever worried about that? Oh, am I going to say something and get arrested?
No. I've kind of molded myself. There's different types of humor out there. There's observational humor and right. self-deprecating humor and just puns, dad jokes. I'm more of a dad joke. Exactly. Well, I like to, because I can't offend anybody if I'm making fun of myself. So I like to make fun of just me being a goofy dad nerd. So no one can be offended because I'm not aiming for anybody.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I aim towards is direct, like towards myself. I don't make political humor. I don't make religious humor or anything like that. So I end up not offending.
So you're
people.
Not diving into like triumph. Territory
no.
where people want to get insulted by it.
No, I try not to insult anybody.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you know that's probably a good idea because I mean, oh my gosh, you know, nowadays you never know, you know, what's gonna, you know, set people off. I feel like that's a good path to go down. But in the same respect, there's also, you know, the other side. You know, it's like, yeah, you want to go down there.
There are some people that can be really edgy and big comedians that are very edgy and they are great and hilarious, but they've been grinding for years and years and years and can do that type of skill.
Right.
I'm just working on my own voice and trying to stay in my path. I'm not an edgy person.
So
yeah.
That actually brings me to a question. So of you, the other comedians that you've heard over the years, who are the comedians that most inspire you?
So, being in West Virginia, we didn't have in Grafton, West Virginia, we didn't have a satellite dish or anything. I had an antenna, right. So I had NBC, PBS, ABC, CBS.
Right.
So a lot
Fox
of
Fox on Saturday sometimes.
If we're lucky, if the clouds are right, I might be able to get Fox. So a lot of
X-Men.
a lot of my. Growing up were Monty Python and Benny Hill, so a lot of really corny stuff. If I was able to get movies like Leslie Nielsen, like the Naked Gun series, or of course in Grafton, very popular was George Carlin albums actually came out. And then I was able to grow into more of a peak, what I consider peak Saturday Night Live with Adam Sandler and...
That's what I consider. That was peak.
His album,
Chris,
everyone.
Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, David Spade. Oh my gosh. You know,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it was. That was when they were banging. And then they had a little tinge of that again when Andy Samberg was on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, they just haven't gotten back since.
But that's kind of where I got a lot of the corny humor from. You know, Monty Python and Mel Brooks and watching Leslie Nielsen, a lot of those Naked Gun series, and Robin Hood, Men in Tights. So
now, Men in Tights is a movie that they could make again.
Oh,
there
yeah.
is one movie that they could not make from him that they could not make today. Blazing Saddles.
Really?
They could not make that movie.
I mean, they did Django Unchained, though. I mean, I know it's not Blazing Saddles, but they said...
It's also from a different director, though.
Yeah.
They go to a Tarantino film expecting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even though we'd expect that from Mel Brooks, I just don't think that maybe he could get away with that same thing nowadays. I mean, that's my belief.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I'm also not Mel Brooks, so, I mean, whenever he writes, I'm going to quote it, edgy things. It's still brilliantly written. And, you know, even though it may seem offensive at times, but he does bring it back around where it's usually, they might seem sexist, but a lot of times it does come back around where it's the guy that's like a more, you make fun of the guy, actually.
So Mel Brooks, now, do you remember the movie Ocean's 11?
Yes.
Do you remember the guy that played Saul? You know, the guy that was like the actor type of the group?
Yes.
Okay. So that actor that played him, I don't remember his name.
Okay.
Him and Mel Brooks have dinner together TV trays in the living room several times a week.
Yeah, I remember Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
Rob Reiner, yes.
Yeah. And I think that's just so cool. You know, it's like, it just makes me think of, I don't know, did you finish Maisel?
No.
Oh.
No, I know. Okay, I haven't seen it.
I won't spoil it.
It's okay. Just
remember that little tidbit that I just gave you.
Okay.
When you finish Maisel.
Okay.
Just keep that in the back pocket. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Me personally, as far as like comedians and stuff, have you ever heard Pete Holmes?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. He is. That's my ultimate right there. Yeah.
We're in a peak of comedy right now that's ridiculous. Between YouTube and Netflix, there's just so many good comedians that are out there. And there's so many avenues for them
Randy
to go
Feltface.
On. I don't recall that.
You don't know Randy? Oh,
no.
I had to look that up.
Okay.
So he is essentially a Muppet.
Okay.
He's a stand-up comedian.
Okay. But not like a Jeff Dunham. Like the character is you see the person.
You don't see the person. He, Randy Feltface, is the comedian.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really funny. And, you know, he can, not only is he very good, because he's very educated, highbrow humor.
Okay.
But he goes straight to the toilet almost immediately all the time.
Okay.
Because he's that, you know, Muppet type character. So it's like you're expecting two different kinds of humor from him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so funny. So.
That's awesome.
So in another question that I have for like in West Virginia, because West Virginia, especially North Central, is so, a lot of people outside of the state don't think it, but I mean, I think it all the time that we are so culturally diverse that we have such a wide history from so many different, cultural backgrounds that. Do you find it sometimes difficult when you're up there because you never know what you're who you're talking to?
Well, and that's what you kind of work towards is trying to be universal, which is extremely difficult because I am a middle-aged cis white male, and so I got to be I've learned from my friends and other comedians of different ages. To try to be a little more diverse, and to make sure that what I'm talking to, whenever I say a joke, it's not just for the cis white male, but also the 60-year-old divorcee or the 20-year-old transitioning kid, and I don't want anything I say to come off as like bigotry or sexist or anything like that.
Right.
So it's interesting, and I'm glad that there is comedy out there and with so many comedians that I can talk to and learn a lot more. And because you can't kind of pigeonhole yourself, because like we're around the same age. We hung out, being from a small town in West Virginia, it wasn't as culturally diverse. I'm glad that there is Morgantown that I can learn from all these different cultures and learning from people that are from larger cities and everything that comes through.
Now, as far as, you know, being a comedian in this area, like how prevalent do you find your subgenre? I mean, is there a lot of other comedians out there that you know of that's in this area?
A lot, I wouldn't say too much. I mean, open mics do produce a good bit of people. I mean, in North Central West Virginia, ones that have been as far as I am and longer that are active are probably 10 to 15, but there are a lot of ones that have started before, after me that have only gone up three or four times in open mics, but it's still a growing community. I love, there's a place in Morgantown called 123 Pleasant Street.
Yeah.
They host it once a month, and I love seeing there's 20, 21-year-old people that are coming in for the first time and just doing it. And it's interesting. You'll try it three or four times, get the bug, and then they'll keep going. Or they might just say, hey, this is the one time I've always wanted to try to do this. And then they do it. They're like, all right, well, I've checked that off my list, and then I'm done.
Right.
But I am excited to see more and more people doing it in the area, because it is a little more diverse that people can see all the different points of view. You know what I mean? It is interesting.
So it's from watching things like, well, you're just talking about Pete Holmes a second ago. I don't know if you saw HBO Crashing.
Yes.
Yeah, Crashing's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Such a good show. One of the things that I think that Pete Holmes was really battling with was, you know, being able to get on stage and get his name out there. And there's so many places to do that.
Yeah.
And then here, I feel like there's not as many places to do that.
No.
So you're still battling with trying to get your name out there. I mean, how do you feel that, like, that's, you know, something that's universally a problem no matter where you are as far as comedy?
Well, in larger cities, if you go to Pittsburgh, they have something at least one every day. Mm-hmm. So you can go every evening and go to a different bar or restaurant and be able to perform. In West Virginia, in North Central West Virginia, that is where we're at, there's usually two or three a month. That's not including shows, but just open mics to get up there and try out new material and work on material that you're working on. So you don't really have as much option compared to Pittsburgh or New York. New York's multiple times a day that you can actually try different places. But it is a little more difficult to get your name out there. Now that I've done it for some time now, some time meaning 2 years, but I am able to become an opener of some shows that are coming through. Like,
cool.
I have a show in Cumberland, Maryland coming up in the end of March, or February, beginning of March. Also another show at the beginning of March, and then I have a show this Thursday for a friend. This just happens to be a lot, but then there'll be some months I won't have a show.
Yeah.
So that's why you got to try to make your own. Like right now I'm working at a local show near my house to try to get something just to have more show time for myself and also the other comedians in the area. You know.
Yeah. So that gets to my another question that I have. So this isn't your day job.
No. I'm an accountant. Yeah.
So here's another question. You're an accountant?
Yes.
Gosh. Well, okay. All right. To the audience, me and Dan actually went to college together.
Yeah, we went to tech school together.
Yeah. And what was our accounting teacher's name? Was it Tiller?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ronnie Tiller. Right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So he rubbed off and
a little bit. A little bit. Yeah. I like numbers. He was really funny. I liked that. We had a dry erase board and he would just use his hand to wipe everything off. And then he would rub his face. And by the end of the day, he looked like a coal miner coming out because he would just have like a dry erase marker up and down his cheeks. He could care less. He was a retired auditor for the IRS.
Yeah.
So he was just enjoying his life afterwards, teaching in that school.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
I remember he would always say that no matter what job you would always get, he would always move within like 5 miles of wherever that place was, because he hated to commute.
Yes.
Yeah. And I understood his pain because when I started actually going out there and getting jobs, you know, I hated commuting so bad. Working from home is the best.
See, I don't mind going into the office, but I do live 5 minutes from my office. I know some people that travel 45 minutes to work and back, and I couldn't do it.
So to finish off the question that I was asking, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Going off on tangents is half of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
No. So for your day job, since this isn't your day job.
Yes.
In a perfect world, and you could do this for a living, would you? Do you think you could do this for a living?
You know, that is an interesting question because I do love my day job. I would have to get paid significant. I would have to get paid to be a comedian first off.
Well, yeah, that perfect world.
Yeah. Perfect world. I could do it, but, I would want to wait until I have a stepdaughter that's 15. So I want to be around, to annoy her as much as possible until she's out of the house.
Right.
And then it would be great for my wife and I to be able to tour around together. That would be fantastic because to get paid to go travel to Florida or to Iowa, it doesn't matter. That would be fun to be like, hey, we're going to pay you to fly here and to perform and make people laugh. And it would be fun to say that my job is to make people laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, I've thought that for the podcast, like if I could do this, you know, actually there's two things that I'd like to do. I'd like to do this and I'd like to make video games. And, you know, that's not what I get to do. But in the same respect though, like I do understand where you're coming from as far as you had to think about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you remember in college, I was like super into programming.
Yeah.
And I got a job programming out of college. And I hated it so much. I couldn't do it all day.
Yeah.
I couldn't. Now I do system administration. And I don't know if you remember, I did that as kind of a hobby or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, in college. And I continued, and I'm actually really good at it. But the thing, not to toot my own horn, but, you know, it's just sometimes the things that you love, you want to continue to love them.
Mm-hmm.
Without having to worry about where that next paycheck's coming from.
Yeah.
Or even if you can do it all the time. Because, I mean, you were talking about, you know, trying to come up with material. If you had to do that all the time, you know. And actually, that's another question I had for you. Like, your daily job and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Or just your daily life. Not just, you know, in West Virginia, but, you know, being around... operating in West Virginia, mm-hmm. does that ever help mold and even channel your comedy, you know?
I think my experiences in West Virginia does channel a lot of my comedy, and I love it because this is where I grew up most of my life. So, finally accepting myself in my 40s as just like a backwoods person that I don't know the bigger cities as much. I mean, my family's from Pittsburgh and I go up and see them, but I do like kind of reflecting upon myself. Like I went to Miami last year and it helps with my observation a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm from this town with no traffic. You know, I mean, I complain if I have to wait too long at a light. But then I'm going around where traffic is everywhere and there's people everywhere and you can walk to the stores instead of driving everywhere. Some people don't have licenses in bigger cities like DC.
New York. Pittsburgh, even.
Pittsburgh, yeah, exactly. So I like to utilize West Virginia as to compare myself to other larger cities. And it's fun to observe that, not to make fun of a larger city, period. I love larger cities. But to make fun of myself or be like, I can't believe people live like this. People have to wait in traffic for like 3 hours to go 2 miles. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that would be a great observational humor for like when you're outside of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I had to drive like 5 minutes to work. I mean, my commute is like the worst, you know, cause the, you know, your audience, they've got, you know, half hour. I remember there's a guy that, I used to work with. He used to live in Atlanta, Georgia.
He got a
house, and it was he lived maybe 15 minutes away. And when he first started working,
yeah.
And after 20 years, it exploded. This house is everywhere.
So it's 15 minutes ended up being significantly longer.
2 hours.
2 hours
every day.
Dang.
Every day. And he was like, I can't do this anymore. So he, you know, moved down here. He got a job. And even though he lives in Deep Creek.
Okay.
But he works down in Clarksburg.
So that's like 45 minutes to an hour, isn't it?
Exactly. But it's no big deal to him. And he's still moving. He's going as fast as he wants. It's no big deal to him.
That's wild.
Not only that, he's in Deep Creek area.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, yeah.
It's beautiful. We actually just went tubing down in Deep Creek.
Oh, really?
At Wisp. We do that every year. It's pretty nice. So the winters lately in like February has been a little bit warmer than it used to.
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with that. World warming or something. So, actually, well, let's take a minute to not talk about our sponsors, but talk about where we are. Oh. So right now we are in the Joe in Fairmont, West Virginia.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
Maybe?
A little bit. It's shadowy. So it is a coffee shop, and they have beer on tap.
Yeah.
I don't think they microbrew, but though the owner, he does, that is his, long-term vision.
Yeah.
I think he bought a piece of property to maybe do some microbrewing and stuff like that. Anyway, so if you are on I-79 in North Central West Virginia, and you're passing by the downtown Fairmont exit, take that downtown exit and go into downtown, and the Joe is right there in the middle of downtown. And great coffee, great beer, really good beer.
On weekends, if you follow them on Facebook or Instagram, they've got like signature waffles or French toast that vary every weekend.
Right.
And I look it up every weekend just to see what they have. It's great. Great food all the time. But I do like that you can have breakfast here and a coffee, and or clear up to having a beer and a sandwich.
Yeah.
Like their wraps are fantastic. I love it here.
Yeah. They used to be, if you're looking it up, they used to be the Joe and Throw. They used to be a co-op with another small business where they made pottery, and that's where the Throw came from. Throwing the clay on the wheel and everything, shaping it, old ghost style. but now they're just the Joe.
I have an image of like you behind me doing the scene from Ghost.
No. I'd be working the.
Oh, I'm behind you. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that is also a reference that a 20-year-old would not know right now. By the way.
And that's a movie that I think they could remake.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
And they could probably get Whoopi Goldberg to do it again.
Yeah. Was it Ted Danson? No, it was...
Roadhouse guy.
Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, he died.
Yeah, he passed away. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, was there anything that you wanted to say more about the experience or the ride so far?
No, it's very fun. I always suggest people anywhere out there, look up open mics. You got to make sure it's not just open mic music, but there's open mic comedy. Ask around. It's extremely difficult nowadays to market. We try Instagram and we try Facebook, but because of all the different avenues out there, unless you put a billboard out there, it's really hard to tell everyone. But just keep looking around. No matter what city you're in, within an hour of a small town, there should be some sort of open mic once or twice a month. And if you see a comedian coming through, go to their shows and support the smaller comedians that are coming through. They're funny. Just because they're not in a stadium doesn't mean they're not funny. But also ask the people there, is like, hey, are there open mics? Because you may not realize that there's like a Facebook group. Like we have a Facebook group called Open Mic North Central West Virginia. If you're throughout West Virginia, North Central has some. Charleston's has now 3 or 4 mics, and Huntington, and that's where I started a little bit before I moved back up here. Huntington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they have a couple open mics a month. I mean, we've got some great local comedians, but no matter if you're not in West Virginia, if you're in any other city, I just went with my buddy a couple weeks ago. It's called Jamestown, New York. It's along Lake Erie. They just started doing a comedy show up there in a skate park. And there's they've been trying to build an open mic in Erie, PA. So no matter where you're at, you can find either free or cheap comedy.
Yeah.
And no offense to large, big stadium comedians. I know they're funny and they're fantastic. I just went on a Burt Kreischer cruise, and everyone there was hilarious. But there's also smaller ones you can pay $5 or $10 for nothing and get some laughs and get a beer, and it's a cheap date also if you want to take someone out. Yeah, so just look up local comedy scenes all everywhere.
Yeah, I will have to say that when I was up in New York,
yeah,
I actually went to the bar that's in from Crashing, the
Grizzly Pear.
Okay. And I gotta say that, just going to that live comedy show to see these guys that, are just getting their start. Like,
yeah.
Some of those guys are absolutely hilarious. And the thing that is a little, I don't know, disappointing sometimes is when those guys do get big, mm-hmm. they become very formulaic. You know, it's the same thing. I mean, they have new jokes, they have new material, but they always present it the same.
Well, it's interesting. Comedy is interesting because I do try to think up new material all the time. I have a notes app and I try to write new stuff. But to really get good at a joke, you got to say it multiple times, retweak it, add things. I'm more of a storyteller. So I take a story, which I find funny, and then so I don't lose an audience, you got to try to the rule of thumb is like 8 to 10 seconds. You want to laugh every like six, eight times a minute, you want to laugh. So you take a story, which I find funny, and I kind of have an ending to, and you try to make more and more jokes in the middle of it.
Right.
So if you go multiple times, you see someone doing it, the same joke over and over, hopefully they are adding more and more to it. There is a gentleman I know from New York that loves West Virginia, comes through a lot, and he was getting ready to do a tour, and he started with an open mic here, and then he did a multiple city tour throughout the United States and came back. And so you get to see, he's trying to work on developing an hour. So I like to see, it's kind of the same jokes, but then as he said them and as he's developed them, because like George Carlin knew what word was funnier than other words. Like as you say them, sometimes you might not realize that the word that he's using is intentionally a funny word, because he's probably worked 25 other words in this sentence, but he made this one has the best reaction.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's seeing the same comedian month after month, hopefully they're still working on that material, or I work on 3 or 4 different sets at a time, but it's nice to see people growing their material. And some people I know are still working on materials for years. As long as you don't put it out there as like a YouTube special or anything, you can take this material and work on it as much as you want. So one story, the same story I told 2 years ago, is significantly better nowadays because I've got more comfortable saying the story, and I've been able to take and realize, okay, no one's really reacting to this 30 seconds. So what can I do to kind of mix it up a little bit? Yeah.
Right.
So it's fun. So go and see the same people all the time. If it's a free open mic, enjoy it and watch them grow. You kind of get a little bit of the inside jokes, like, okay, because you get this person's personality, you know?
One of the comedians that I saw not too long ago, actually, it was almost a year ago, in Cassie went to go see him. One of our favorite comedians when we were first married, Brian Regan.
Yes.
Oh, man. So we went to go see him live at the Don Knotts Theater. I don't know what the name is.
The Met.
Yeah, the Met.
Yeah.
Okay. So we went to go see him there. Every single joke, every single one, never heard it before. Never heard it before. And that's one of the things that I've always read about him. He's always working on new stuff.
And some people are brilliant.
Yeah, and it was so funny, though. He was up there, and he was like, all right, I got something new. And then he goes through this whole thing. And then he didn't get an immediate laugh, and he goes, well, that one needs to be reworked.
Yeah. Well, there's a comedian, Rory Scovel, that's really picking his name up. But he has a small YouTube documentary where he started in Atlanta, and he wanted to do, I think, 1 month of complete off-the-cuff comedy, where every night he would go in, not know anything to talk about, not have anything planned, and then just start talking. And really hone that, the craft of like crowd work and also building his material there. That is a skill that is way far above and beyond me at all, period. I'm too compartmentalized, but it's great. I love whenever I see people like that. And, you know, next time Regan comes around, he might say some of the same jokes.
Yeah.
But then you might hear a joke that didn't work before, but he might have reworked it a little bit. And then, boom, it might be the best joke he had the entire evening. And the funny thing is that joke he says in Morgantown, West Virginia, might completely hit in like Omaha, Nebraska. Because the crowd is just different enough for everyone just to love it.
Oh, that was one of the things that Pete Holmes was talking about. I don't know if you saw his latest on Netflix.
No, not yet.
Oh,
no.
Really good. It came out maybe a month ago. Mm-hmm. I'm Not For Everyone. Uh-huh. That's what it's called. He's constantly like telling jokes. Okay, that one didn't work here in Minnesota. Oh, right, that one's Minnesota edgy. And it's like, this one would be like lowbrow humor in California where I'm from, but that one works here.
And that's different things you learn. And when you get to the Pete Holmes size also, it's nice. He'll bring in Pete Holmes fans.
Yeah.
Where right now, my mom and my sister might be Dan Desmond fans, but everyone else that comes over, I got to make sure to work with them. If I start having like 100,000 to a million followers on Instagram, I may be able to say my own inside the pocket jokes like Pete Holmes.
Yeah.
Because everyone that goes and buys a ticket for him, they're paying $30, $40, $50 a ticket. They know what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's everything that we needed to go over.
Okay.
I don't think I had any other questions. Oh, you know what? Actually, I did have one.
Okay.
Can we hear anything?
I got something I'm working on.
Okay.
And because I talked about this multiple times here today about working on a joke. So I have the couple steps process. That's a little bit of my process. People have a couple different processes. But this is what I'm working on. So there's the true story. And the true story is I got my stepdaughter a black light. Okay. In the 90s, when I went and worked at the mall, I went to Spencer's. One of the first things I want a lava lamp. I want a black light, for my room, because that was a cool thing.
The checklist.
Those are lava lamp, black light. So I wanted to be the cool stepdad. And so I got her a black light. And so when I'm starting, I tell this joke, and I made the joke develop where I sound like the father from A Christmas Story, where I'm sitting down over Christmas, and I got my stepdaughter a black light. And so it was in the box, and it was from Papa Bezos. So it was in the Amazon box in the corner, because I was too excited to wrap it for her. I wanted to give it to her that day. And so I felt like the father at A Christmas Story, where I'll sit back with a pipe and I tell her to come here and open up this gift for her. She's like, "What is it?" I said, "Well, you got to see what it is." So she opens up the box and she looks at it and she's like, "I don't know what this is." And I was like, "Well, plug it in." And so whenever she plugs it in, she turns to me and says, "Is this a grow light?" And I'm like, "No, that's not a grow light. Go to your room, not until you're 21. And then I had to look up to see if a black light could grow marijuana because she's 15 years old. And so the true story is I did give her the gift and she did open it and ask if it was a grow light. And I love this story. But then I'm elaborating with the Christmas story, and I'm trying to add a little more of these tags. Tags are like jokes within jokes, like little one-liners. So I'm trying to make it so I could tell the story. It's a good, solid one-minute bit with a punchline of this is a grow light. So I try to add, I'm working on telling more and more in the middle to grow it out, maybe add a couple tangents here and there.
It's just a grow light. That's good.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny.
It practically writes itself.
It does. That's why I wrote that down. I was like, well, I got to write this down. But so developing, for anyone that's interested in being comedy, I took a true story, and it could have been a quick 10-second joke. I got my daughter a black light. She thought it was a grow light. And then I made it into a minute right now, but I'm adding more to fill it in. And you can take that minute, then I can run tangents off. So at the end, it's always going to be, is this a grow light? So in the middle, I could talk about being a dweeb mall rat, spending all my money on Dragon Ball Z VHSs and buying myself a lava lamp, even though I've never smoked before in my entire life. And then so I can make that into 5 minutes if I wanted to. And the fun thing about comedy is I can have the quick 10-second joke, or if I keep working on it, I got the 1-minute long joke, or I can even grow that story into 5 minutes and then add all these tangents left and right. So that's kind of the process of, that's a joke I'm working on, and these are different things you can do to kind of develop it. Now, this is 2 years in. I've learned a lot in those 2 years, and hopefully we can come back again in another 2-3 years, and I can tell you that joke, and I can go on 5 minutes about this, and I can just go all over the place, and then you'll be laughing every couple seconds here and there.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
We'll have to do that.
That'll be fun.
All right, so we are done with the comedy portion. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to go into the final piece that we always do for the show, which is geek outs. So you've listened to the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
So you know what it's about. So, Dan, what are you geeking out about right now?
Well, it's the same thing I've been geeking out for 30 plus years now. We were just talking about earlier before the podcast is Ninja Turtles. There's a secondary, a new explosion, Mutant Mayhem's out there. Colin Jost is, writing a live action, part of it. Nickelodeon's also doing a spinoff of Mutant Mayhem for a series.
I don't know why they didn't have a commercial during the Super Bowl for it, because Paramount was the one that won the bid for the Super Bowl, and Mutant Mayhem was such a big hit. Why wouldn't you announce that? They didn't actually have to spend any money to advertise it.
No,
it was a perfect opportunity.
It's great.
Keep going.
But no, it's I like the new resurgence. I mean, I think Mutant Mayhem followed suit after Spider-Verse on the new type of style of CGI, and then talked about The Last Ronin, which was. Just a fun project from one of the producers or the original writers, Kevin Eastman.
Kevin Eastman and
Peter Laird.
Yeah, Peter Laird.
Yeah.
I think Laird has stepped down as an executive. Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad that they did. It was supposed to be a one-off five-issue series, and it's really got a resurgence for the adults. We're talking about the people that make God of War are going to take the same engine of God of War. And they're developing a Ronin game,
which would be fantastic.
I'm hopefully within the next 2 years they have it, if they can ride the Mutant Mayhem range.
For our viewers, if you haven't read that graphic novel, The Last Ronin, it's basically that not so much post-apocalyptic, but dystopian future, and there's only one turtle left, and half of the actually. Pretty much the one of the big intrigues of it is which turtle is it,
mm-hmm.
So it's just a fantastic book. I mean, the artwork is great, the action is great, the story is so deep and rich.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one that I feel like Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird really had time to think about it and really craft it in the background.
Well, they wanted to do it since the 80s, but they didn't want to really have an ending like that for a while, and then now that they are older and have plenty of time and money, they decided just to have this spinoff. And if you haven't read it, it's gotten a lot of accolades of writing. You can just buy the trade paperback or probably borrow from a library, and it's the five issues that is one condensed story, but it's did so well they have prequels to it, and they're having post-quels?
They're doing a
sequel. Yeah. That's a better word for it than a post-quel.
Well, it kind of is a post-quel.
I think I made up a word.
It's basically in a continuation of the story that we will not spoil if you haven't read it.
No, but please read it. I mean, if you haven't seen The Mutant Mayhem, it's fun. It's beautiful. The music's great. The voice acting's great. And there's just this new resurgence of Ninja Turtles. I'm glad. It's always been around for years and years and years, but it seems like it's super popular. Yeah. There's great toys. If you like the old school toys or anything, or little statuettes, it's so much beautiful things happening right now. And I like that, even though it is under Nickelodeon, it can kind of run its own little pacing. It's not under DC or Marvel, so they have a little more freedom to do their own formulas. They don't have to follow the same suit every time.
So one of the reasons, I don't know if you saw this article, but one of the reasons that they hadn't announced that they were going to do a sequel for Last Ronin was because Last Ronin was actually when, the reason why they called it Last Ronin, well, one reason was because their Eastman and Liard's rights to Ninja Turtles was running out.
Oh,
so it was
okay.
their last ride.
Okay.
You know? So in the what Paramount had agreed to do was let them come out with the sequel. Because they own the rights now. You know?
Okay.
They Paramount owns the rights to the Turtles.
Okay.
So they weren't gonna let them, you know, come out with, you know, something that was gonna be detrimental to what is now their intellectual property.
Yeah.
So, and it makes sense that Eastman is actually staying on.
Oh yeah.
You know, to our view, I'm sure you know this, but
yeah.
You know, to our viewers, even before Kevin Eastman and Peter Liard were you know working on comics together and came up with the Ninja Turtles, the actual conception of the Ninja Turtles predated that. It was actually originally conceptualized by Kevin Eastman and his best friend in grade school, Steve Levine, and both of them are still very big into and very involved in it. And I can understand why Liard is stepping down, because I think he's ready to ride off.
I think he's like 10 years old, isn't he? 70 something now.
I think you're right.
Yeah, actually. I think he's pushing 70.
Yeah.
But it's a cool, if you want to learn a little bit about this on Netflix, The Toys That Made Us has a good thing about the Playmates toys. There's other ones, but it does talk about the story, and even Kevin and Peter kind of parted ways for a little bit, and actually them getting back together, Netflix, The Toys That Made Us, actually got them to meet each other for the first time in years, and kind of revamped their relationship. And it's pretty exciting. I mean, that's a nice little story about the toys also, because the toys in the 80s is very interesting, where I mean it was the toys that made the TV shows,
right.
And the differences between like the comic book is extremely different than what you see in the 80s, and that it's one of the good episodes of The Toys That Made Us.
It was so funny though. I don't know, about 6 months ago my wife had ordered something for my daughter off of Netflix, or not Netflix, off of Amazon.
Yeah.
And I was looking through the cart after the fact, and I was like, "Why did you order this?" And she goes, "What is it?" And I'm like, "It's The Last Ronin. Is this for me?" And she's like, "No, Bella wanted to get this." So
really?
My daughter.
That's awesome.
And I didn't even tell her about it.
That's cool.
She found it organically and wanted to read it. So it's sitting downstairs, you know, she's read the whole thing.
That's
her.
Great.
Yeah, so, you know, she's a Turtle super fan, too. She grew up on the 2012 Ninja Turtles.
Okay, those are really good.
Those personally are my favorite iteration. As much as I love the 80s,
yeah.
That one from the 2012 is my favorite.
That was fun.
And that's the one she grew up on. But she loves the one that's on Netflix, Turtles Rise.
Oh, I haven't really watched it.
Okay,
much.
So I actually couldn't get into it.
Okay.
But the movie following it is really good.
Oh.
If you don't watch the show,
watch the movie
comes at the end. Because it's so good that they're going to make new episodes.
Really?
They're bringing it back.
Now, a geek out is there's a toy line called NECA. They're one toy manufacturer called NECA, N-E-C-A. Okay. And I have very minimal space in my house, so I try to keep my toy collection to a minimum. And so my wife agreed these are okay. Not that she's mean about it. I asked her if this was display appropriate. I don't want to buy
something.
You don't
have to pretend that we're not the bosses.
Yeah.
We're not the bosses.
No. But, I mean, I don't want to buy something and then have it just sit in a box in a basement somewhere. Like, I want to be able, if I'm spending $30 on something, I would like for it to be not wasted.
Yeah.
So they did a crossover Ninja Turtles with the Universal Monster series.
Okay.
And so there's a blend of like Leonardo as the Hunchback of Notre Dame, Raphael as Frankenstein, Michelangelo as the Mummy, and they're really cool figures.
I think I've seen those.
I have all of them that are currently out, and they're fun little series. Like Van Helsing is Splinter, Bride of Frankenstein is April O'Neil, Invisible Man's Donatello. They're really, really good, and they're still developing them.
Van Helsing actually from Dracula, or Van Helsing from like Van Helsing movies that, you know, where he's more of a cowboy? Or is he actually, is he like a doctor type of?
No, he's more of the killer, the vampire killer, Van Helsing. What was that, Hugh Jackman?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's kind of
the
that. The
huge
Jackman.
So, yeah, feel free to use that.
The huge Jackman.
The huge Jackman. No, I thought of that when I was watching The Greatest Showman.
I love that movie.
It's so good.
My wife, I was listening to the album on Spotify. She's like, why are you listening to this? And then I caught her a couple days later listening to the soundtrack. And I was like, I told you, it's a really good soundtrack. It's a really great movie.
From now on, that's all we're going to be singing in our heads.
Oh, yeah. The Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. So I'll move on to my geek out.
Okay,
so,
yeah. What's going on with you?
So, do you remember? Okay, you remember PlayStation?
Yes.
Okay, you remember? Did you have a PlayStation?
I had a PlayStation 2.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Do you remember the huge theatrical, you blockbuster hit of PlayStation, Final Fantasy VII?
Oh yeah. I got the remake on PS4.
Okay. So
yeah.
Rebirth comes out next week.
Yeah.
That's the next chapter. But
they're doing three chapters now,
yeah,
aren't they?
So
they already are developing a third chapter when the new one comes out.
Yeah. So they so this one will go all the way up to what happens at the City of Ancients.
Oh, okay.
So we'll find out what happens.
It's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Then I also heard they're doing Final Fantasy IX also, aren't they? Aren't they remaking that?
Oh, no, I heard that there was talks, but I hadn't seen anything definite. It doesn't mean there isn't.
Yeah.
Because I can't see everything.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hope it keeps fueling Final Fantasy also. This would be good to come back. Because a lot of the Final Fantasy now is like kind of an MMO, like a lot of the newer ones, right?
Well, did you play,
like, was it 15 or something like that?
Yeah, 14. That one's an MMO.
Okay.
But then 15 was Boy Band Road Trip.
Okay.
If you played it, you'd get that joke. 15 is all action. It's not menu magic casting.
Okay.
But that one, there is magic casting, but in the world of Final Fantasy 16, he can innately cast magic because he's an avatar for one of the summons.
That's cool.
So there's only so many people that are actually... So people can cast magic using ether, but he doesn't have to use ether to cast magic.
That's awesome.
And I gotta tell you, if you have a PlayStation 5...
Yeah.
That game's awesome.
Really? 16?
Yeah, 16 is really good.
Okay.
I stand on that one. And the people that don't like that one, in my opinion, it's not that they're butthurt or anything. They are. But, no, it's that they didn't play Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Okay.
Where it was more action-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And there was still the menu system, cast magic and stuff like that.
But there's you can configure those settings, though.
Yeah.
Where it's not nearly as much.
Well, this one, it worked for that.
Yeah.
Especially since, Die Hard 7 fans, they wanted that ability to still control things outside of battle. With 16, for the backstory and the world that they crafted, it makes sense.
So it's a little more like God of War and Spider-Man and stuff like that?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, so God of War, you played Ragnarok, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man, such a good game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic narrative, too. For a game that started out on a series that was just all action,
all blood,
mindless, killing, to an actual, because you're a father now, too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. If I had played God of War and God of War Ragnarok, if I had played that 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gotten it as much as I get it now. I was like, oh man.
But it's growing with you. Yeah. And the narratives, the stories are becoming more and more. I mean, video games, a lot of them are art now. And I do love a Mario where you just jump, but this is another one. It's just another story you can watch. You're playing it for 60 hours. You're playing a movie for 60 hours.
You become the movie. You more emotionally invest into that than you would a movie.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean that you can't make that connection with certain movies.
Yeah, I know.
But it also means that sometimes if you are playing as the protagonist, sometimes that emotional level is much more easily achieved.
Yeah.
When you are that protagonist.
Yeah.
There was actually some really good moments in 16. I am very, very, going back to what I was talking about, I'm very, very excited about Seven Rebirth. I actually just replayed all of Remake and Intermission already again.
Okay.
And now I'm sitting there with nothing to play, but Sony just came out with a...
So it comes out next Tuesday? Or Thursday, something like
that? Thursday. Leap year. Comes out leap year.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, I actually pre-ordered it through GameStop, so I can just go down and get my copy and, you know, get. I'm actually taking the day off.
There you go.
The next day, because, you know, installing and everything.
Yeah, that's a bad thing about games. You put them in, and then you're like, I got to wait 2 hours. So you got to, like, hurry up and put them in right now.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about taking off the morning when it came out so I could go get it. I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not 13 anymore. I'm going to set aside the Friday.
Then you have a three-day weekend. There you go.
Friday off. Well, I got to do some stuff for the church that next day, but that Friday, I'm going to take off all... I mean, I'm probably going to get like 10 hours into it, so...
That's awesome. Charge your controllers.
Yeah, no. Well, I've got two.
There you go, the hot swap mount. Nice.
Yeah. So, so anyway, I think this is finishing out. And Dan, any final words? Any final notes?
No. Checking with you. No. Thank you for letting me do this. I'm excited. Hopefully, a lot of your viewers and listeners will go to support local comedy.
Yeah.
If you're ever curious, if you're in the Morgantown area, North Central West Virginia Open Mic is a private Facebook group you can join. On Instagram, I'm Desmond, D-A-D-E-S-M-O-N-D. And so please follow and just go to shows. You don't even have to go to my show. Just go to shows. Support comedy. And thank you all for listening. It's been a good conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. So this has been RGCWV, Random Geek Culture in West Virginia. I'm your host, Luke Percy. And thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. If you're watching this on YouTube, like, subscribe, and leave comments, even if you didn't like it, the algorithm likes interaction, so, if you don't like it, tell me that you don't like it, so then somebody else will watch it, because then it'll get re-injected to the algorithm.
Oh, no.
So, thank you for not liking it. So, anyway, we're all over the place, if you want to send me a question or anything, you can even send me a text to 304-566-9777. Welcome to the end.
That's awesome, buddy.
Yeah.
That was a good time.